This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
Hello, fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, I suppose the big headline of the week was the latest US inflation numbers, and US consumer price growth rose at the fastest pace in almost four decades. And that certainly has stoked the Fed's fears about the threat of elevated inflation and its consequences for the economic recovery. That CPI number, 7%.
The consensus estimate was 7.1%, and I think there was some traders that were anticipating that we could have even gone as high as 7.2. So I think there was a clear reaction to the market that that it wasn't as bad as expected. But still, it shows you that inflation remains elevated, and that we're probably a couple more months away from the peak with inflation in the U.S.
Incredible, isn't it? If you said somebody, 3 years ago, inflation is going to be at 7% and it's going to rise even further, people wouldn't have believed you.
And I think the big takeaway is when you take a look at inflation at 7% and you take a look at interest rates here in the U.S., we're near zero, and growth expectations for 2022 is at slightly above 4%, let's say, that spells policy mistake. So you're seeing a market that is still somewhat upbeat on risky assets. That's why equities are. It's a mixed story. Tech has been getting pummeled, and that's mainly because there is obviously this belief that interest rates have to go higher, and that has really always been a drag for tech stocks. But I think, we're getting, close to the end of this current surge in treasury yields. And I think that we're getting closer to a potential short-term bottom here. And I think there's still optimism that, you're not going to continue to see U.S. equities make a big push towards fresh record highs if tech continues to plunge. So I think there's still a lot of investors that, yes, they're rotating to the cyclical rotation value trade, but still tech has to be a big part of the story. And you're going to probably see that a lot of traders are salivating at some of these pullbacks that we've seen with some of the high flyers.
When you say policy mistake, though, Ed, are you suggesting the Fed just hasn't acted soon enough in terms of raising rates? Is that the big problem? Because we're not in a very natural situation with coronavirus. You're nearly 2 years old now. You could hardly blame policymakers for being, a very, very difficult situation where they don't know really which way to go, because they're on the one hand scared of hitting the recovery, on the other, they're thinking, well, perhaps raising rates won't make any difference to the cost of living and inflation, because there are many external factors, energy prices and the labor problem and so on. It is a very, very odd situation. It's not like the inflation of the 70s or even, just 10, 15 years ago. It's a very unusual set of circumstances.
I think that the unprecedented response to the pandemic, Fed gets an A+. I think the problem is that as the U.S. Had their vaccine rollout, and it was pretty clear that every American that wanted a vaccine had the ability to get it, there's a big part of the population that doesn't want it, and that we're at a level where the country has people who want the vaccine, they're protected. The people that don't want the vaccine, they're already living their life. So the economy is ready to return to normal, and that's been the case before Omicron, and it really has been the case throughout Omicron. And I think that what you're seeing is, what was the benefit that these last few months or several months of these asset purchases that the Fed was doing to the economy. You know, the Fed was overly stimulating the economy. They needed to be starting to pull back once we started to see that the economy was gaining traction, that we were starting to win the war against COVID. And the problem is that now they're scrambling. And I think that the market is always concerned about a Fed policy mistake. And now you're seeing that the Fed is now trying to make up for a big delay in tackling inflation. And now that is going to possibly force them to deliver faster rate hikes. And in addition to that, a rushed balance sheet runoff. So I think that in an ideal world, what the Fed would have done was they would have finished their QE, you know, wind down, you know, not waiting till March, but that would have been done by the end of last year, and that they could have started raising rates already. But I mean, the Fed is, I think, you know, whether or not they missed raising rates by a few months, that's, I think, still, the economy is going to be able to handle that. And I think that in the end, that you're probably going to see that there is strong optimism here, that there's still belief that after the second quarter, a lot of these supply chain issues, bottlenecks, are going to ease up, and that the economy should still be fairly in a good place. I think the Fed right now is there, you know, there's a chorus of Fed speakers that are now supporting, you know, that March could be the time to go ahead and raise rates, I think everyone is pricing that in. I think financial markets have it at over 90% right now, and the balance sheet runoff question is probably going to be answered sometime closer to the summertime.
And that chorus of Fed members open to that March rate hike followed Jerome Powell's speech on Tuesday. And he said that inflation represents a severe threat to the economy. And the Fed has plans to raise rates more than expected if price rises don't level off. I mean, what sort of numbers are we predicting now for 2022?
I think when you take a look at some of the other factors that really drive inflation right now, I think there should be optimism that, you know, we are getting close to the peak. I think the producer prices index that showed core PPI possibly peaked already. When you take a look at China's factory prices, that rose more slowly than expected in December, and that's a leading indicator for the U.S. because the Chinese goods or the U.S. companies use to make products. So there's optimism that you know, some of this inflation could be slowing right now, and if softer inflation continues, then that is a welcome sign for all policymakers. I'm anticipating that we will probably have, I think CPI will likely have another month or two of 7% readings, low 7% readings, and then we should anticipate that I think we'll start to slowly decline, In addition to that, I think that you're likely to see that there is a lot of emphasis too on what we're going to see on the fiscal side of things, because there has been a major setback on the White House, where Build Back Better seems like it's become Build Back Never, as Senator Manchin and President Biden don't seem nowhere close to reaching an agreement now on that $1.8 trillion last stimulus bill. And I think the problem is, the fear is that Senator Manchin's a conservative Democrat. And I think the fear is that another $1.8 trillion is just going to fuel inflation. And this is not going to sit well with Manchin's camp. And I think we're now becoming less confident that we're going to get a significant package here. So there's some risks to some of the growth outlook, and how will the economy perform Now that we're no longer getting, we're getting a much less accommodative Fed, because remember, even when the Fed raises rates by 25 basis points, rates are still low. This is still supportive of economic growth. So I think, you know, it's going to take the Fed a long time to get to neutral, and that might take a couple of years. So the economy is still going to have, I think, a good amount of support here. And that's why I'm still fairly optimistic for U.S. equities for the rest of the year. It's just going to be, I think, a very choppy first quarter as everyone tries to grapple with figuring out whether or not, is it three rate hikes? Some people are targeting four and five. And more importantly, though, the balance sheet runoff, how aggressive will that be in the summertime?
Meanwhile, it's earnings season, of course, and we've had some interesting results over the last 24 hours. I suppose the most noticeable was the figures from JP Morgan, which were down 5%. Citigroup disappointed as well. Wells Fargo actually more positive. But what was your impression, particularly from those JP Morgan figures?
I think JP Morgan really surprised a lot of investors. The CFO lowered their guidance on headwinds, including wage inflation. It turns out that the largest bank for the U.S. Is really battling higher expenses, and this whole fear of wage inflation is really disrupting the outlook for JP Morgan. And when you throw that with some softer trading numbers, analysts were a little bit disappointed here, and that's why you're seeing JP Morgan take a big hit. And we have to remember too, financials have been the beneficiary of surging treasury yields. You know, the 10-year was, you know, it in just the last couple of months, it's seen a big move from like the 140s to, you know, almost hitting 180. So financials have really outperformed. So this is a clear opportunity for profit taking. Does this alter or change the, you know, long-term view for JP Morgan? Not really. I think there's a lot of positives. I think some of the key takeaways is that Diamond is, he signaled that he's still optimistic on the U.S. consumer. I think there's still a lot of reasons to anticipate that. While yes, these expenses are concerning, that, you know, this, I think that, you know, JP Morgan is still a bank that is nicely positioned as they have several different revenue streams, and as far as M&A goes, as far as trading activities, they're well diversified, and lending activity is what is another area where they're probably going to continue to benefit from. They're benefiting, you know, from those healthy mortgages, and overall, JP Morgan, though, this is for a lot of investors, it will probably trigger a buy the dip opportunity. But obviously, it's sell the news after those disappointing comments on just rising expenses, and which is predominantly a wage inflation story.
And Ed, before we look to the week ahead, I wanted to quickly ask you about the latest on Dogecoin, which values of which soared more than 12% today. Now, that is after Elon Musk, his company Tesla, has started to allow people to buy brand merchandise using Dogecoin, which I can remind listeners, started initially as a bit of a joke. Elon Musk announced this on Twitter, of course, earlier today. He had hinted of these plans, but it's quite a significant price rise from Dogecoin just after a fairly lackadaisical comment from him, in a sense, just because about merchandise.
Very much so. And I think a lot of people, when they cover cryptos, it's Dogecoin has interestingly been a coin that it attracted many Elon Musk loyalists, and it for the most part it never really gained much momentum after Musk decided to back it. As far as increased usage, it never, there was never really any breakthroughs. Still, you saw Solana, Polkadot, even Cardano show better gains in usage. But there we have it. You know, merchandise purchases. Yes, Dogecoin, you know, did benefit from that, and its market cap now up to 24 billion. So it's still it's now a top, it's a top 11 crypto, just behind Polkadot, which is to me stunning. And I think it goes to show you the influence that Musk still has. But it also coincides with also a broader you know, rally in the crypto space. And right now this is a very difficult environment for all cryptocurrencies. You're seeing investors really diversify away from cryptocurrencies and going into metaverse bets. They're buying NFTs. They're buying new avatars, skins for different video games, and there's so many different types of NFT spin-offs that you're seeing that that space has seen the explosive growth that we're used to seeing with cryptocurrency values. So the market, I mean, and I think it's important to remember that you know, probably 98% of these NFTs are going to become worthless. You know, a lot of the money is just being shuffled around in NFTs. I think ultimately there is still a lot of institutional holders that are interested in long-term bets that, you know, some of these blockchain technologies are going to be powered by these coins, and that's going to provide real world use and applications that are going to revolutionize some industries. And I know a lot of retail consumer companies are you know, focusing on these markets now. So it's interesting to see exactly how this space will evolve. But I think that the interest is still there, but it's just spreading into other aspects of crypto related investments. So it's becoming a lot more harder to cover. But I think the Dogecoin story is interesting, but I don't anticipate that is going to give it any other legs higher here as far as that particular coin.
Let's look ahead to the week ahead. And what are the outstanding highlights that we should look out for as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think the main event is going to be China. We have a wrath of data. The main event for a lot of traders is going to be Chinese GDP. It's expected to go below 4%. That is I think for a lot of traders likely to spur some action from the PBOC. Production figures are also expected to flatline. Retail sales and fixed asset investment spending is I think sputtered towards into year end. So the message to policymakers is an easy one. The economy needs support. We're coming to the Olympics. We have lockdowns in place. There needs to be more action. That's why you're probably going to see China will probably trim their 1-year medium-term lending facility rate. You're probably see like a 5 basis point at its mid January operation. So I think there's you know, expectations China's going to act, and China's going to be a big focal point. I think for next week, the Bank of Japan has a policy meeting too. They're you know, obviously I think since we've started these podcasts, they're going to keep policy unchanged, but they might. Do a little adjusting on their inflation forecasts. So that's going to be where traders will focus on. When you take a look at what's happening in Europe, Euro area consumer prices is a big reading. Those are expected to rise above 5% from a year earlier. So that could be the highest for the region since the inception of the euro. And then also we'll have the meeting minutes for the ECB, which will definitely be heavily reviewed. And I think that you're going to see exactly how policymakers were assessing the persistently high pricing pressures that have been in place. For the UK inflation figures, that's going to be the main event on Wednesday. I think they're expected to hold steady in December. That's before peaking in April at around 6.5%. I think for rate decisions, Turkey, this is an interesting one because, you know, the unorthodox policy of following what President Erdogan wants, and they've delivered over 500 basis points of rate cuts in four consecutive meetings. This meeting, economists are expecting them to keep rates steady. With Turkey, it's a wild card. You can never expect them to just keep rates steady if Erdogan is still pushing for a rate cut. So that's going to be an important one to pay attention to. And I can't forget what's happening in the U.S., but we have a blackout period for the Fed speakers because of the policy decision later in the month. So quite on the Fed front, but the data will be heavily on housing activity. That's supposed to slightly soften existing home sales, building permits, and also jobless claims is expected to improve a little bit. This week we saw a little bit of a spike higher. And with respect to the main focal point for a lot of traders, it's going to be earnings season. We have Netflix, Procter & Gamble. I think Procter & Gamble will be interesting to see if they're still getting price increases and whether or not they're going to continue to pass them to the consumer. So that could really provide more insight on the inflation story going beyond the first quarter, which would really impact some people's theories on whether or not inflation will peak, if the peak will be in the next couple months or not.
Okay, Ed, we wish you a very good weekend and look forward to speaking to you again same time next week.
Looking forward to it too. Thank you, Johnny.
This is the Oanda Podcast.